Hello, everybody. This is Bill Cameron from The Drive. Podcasts of The Drive are presented by Southeastern Industrial Contractors, now hiring for great-paying skilled trade positions. Call 334-209-6355 to learn more. Thanks for listening.
When you can't hear me.
No. But one thing you shouldn't have to worry about, I don't think you're going to have to worry about getting rained on tonight. So
I hope not. I hope not. Hopefully not. I mean, it's sun's out now. It's amazing. We needed the rain, but I was worried about the high school games, and there are two big ones in town tonight. And, it'll be slower for us this weekend with no catering, but then we get swamped with the two back-to-back home games and Thanksgiving thrown in the middle.
Yeah, that's right. And Don yesterday reminding me, and he's going to need to keep doing that till I do it, to go ahead and get my my order for the smoked turkey in. Yeah. Because I'll tell you what, nobody does it better. Well, nobody does it better.
Well, I appreciate that.
what's the thing we're supposed to promote for tomorrow?
We are promoting the watch party tomorrow.
Really
that's
exciting
going on
stuff
over at Plainsman Park.
Wow.
Kia of Auburn is sponsoring a big watch party. It's going to be shown on the big screen there at Plainsman
People
Park.
People are calling Bill to find out more information about this about that. So you got the watch party at home base. Star athletes including Jacoby Thorpe from the track team, Zoe Slaughter from the volleyball team, Kevin Overton from the basketball team. Auburn basketball, as Bill mentioned, got a big win last night at Neville against the Merrimack Warriors. And I was struck by, and probably you've had this feeling before, Coach, where your team convincingly beat an overmatched opponent, but you felt like they left something out there, and you know that there's more that they can show you.
Yeah.
More consistency.
Right.
You know, I think that was something like Stephen Pearl was – you would think if you just looked at the final score that Stephen Pearl could seem content or pleased or even, you know, sort of excited. And I think that the post-game press conference, I was struck by he knows that he's going to need more and his team is capable of more when they play. I mean, and there are some heavy hitters between now and the start of conference play on this schedule, including
starting next week.
Yeah, including that Houston game, and including that you've got several in Vegas that look like they could be against significant teams. So yeah, I mean it's a I think that it's striking that Stephen Pearl seems to think this team is good. They have the potential to be great, and he wants to see them fulfill that potential. What did you think of the game last night, Bill? You were there.
Yeah, I mean, I thought Auburn picked it up defensively, especially early on, and they shot it pretty well. But I mean, that was such an outmatched team. They didn't have any size. They couldn't really challenge Auburn inside, and I think that's going to be the big key. I was very pleased with what we saw from Mecca Purim. I mean, Mech, I thought showed. That he can be a factor, he can be a rim protector, and I thought he looked pretty comfortable offensively as well. I mean, now, you know, again, he's playing against guys that were 4 and 5 inches, you know, or more shorter than he was, so he had that big advantage. But it was good to be able to see him out there with Keyshawn Murphy out.
Oh, right. I think that the front court in general is, I mean, especially when you get beyond Keyshawn Hall, who looks like he's just going to be
he's going to score a lot of points this year.
Yeah, he's going to be, as surprising as it would seem, like you would have thought that Tahad would clearly be the top guy on the scouting reports, but through a couple of games, yeah, you have to focus on Tahad if you're playing Auburn. Obviously, he's going to have the ball a ton, but it's Keyshawn Hall when Auburn needs a basket, when Auburn needs to generate some offense, when Auburn needs to reverse the momentum of the game. You want the ball in his hands, and he's got, he's just got a real difficult. You know, we're talking about the Auburn offense in football needing to find ways to be difficult to defend. Keyshawn Hall is difficult to defend, right? Because
because even if you're defending him, he has that knack of being able to make a move toward the basket and draw the foul.
And defending him alone isn't easy, right? Yes. I mean, defending him without fouling is a real challenge, and I want to see when Auburn steps up the level of competition, I want to see what that looks like with some maybe, you know, with different players trying their luck against a guy. Keep in mind, leading scorer in the Big 12 last year. Like this is a guy who's not it doesn't seem like a flash in the pan or a fluke like deal. I mean, it was reasonable to think he could be one of the leading scorers in the conference. And through a couple of games, and I don't know how much Stephen Pearl keeps referencing the four games Auburn's played, and I don't, like, the Oklahoma State game was so competitive, I understand why both coaches would sort of treat it like they played a regular season game. Memphis was a little bit weird, right, with the starting lineups and the usage right. and things, but the fact is, like, Stephen Pearl looks at it as, yeah, he's seen his team play four games since he took over. He's made reference to in the four games we played and stuff like that, and yeah, when Auburn, I mean, through four games, Keyshawn Hall's been really tough, and through the two in Neville, he's just been a vital part of the Auburn offense.
Yeah, Auburn's got to get better. They've got to get better play at point guard, I think, as well as underneath. Tahad has been okay here in the first couple of ball games. Hasn't shot extremely well. Auburn's not moving the ball as well. I mean, last year, that's one of the things that was amazing to watch was, you know, they kept moving it and moving it and moving it, and at times you'd feel that extra pass gets a really good look. Not that Auburn hasn't gotten some good looks this year, but it doesn't appear that you have the crispness of the passes offensively yet. So I think that's something else that I'm sure that Stephen Pearl is looking for.
And we still... I mean, the rim protection was so, and I'm going to hammer this, like, during the non-conference slate, I think. Like, the rim protection was so good. Coach, it's like when you have, if you have a year where your team is just otherworldly against the run as a defense in football, the next year, if it drops to merely average to above average rim protection, that can seem like a big step back.
Yeah.
And I think that's a little bit of what Auburn saw in the first couple of games. Like, well, these guys are going to find a way,
but
it's not Dylan and Janai guarding the paint like you've had the last couple of seasons.
Yeah, well, you know, you get spoiled when you have great players like that, and as well as we have, you know, played the last couple of years. And, yeah, they'll get better. I mean, it's such an advantage now to have those two games, you know, the exhibition games. Just if we didn't have those. You'd really be searching and trying to get some combinations and, you know, the best fits. But, you know, basketball is a long, long season. And, you know, yeah, we got spoiled. But, you know, we have athletes. That's the nice thing. And they'll get better for sure.
I mean, we'd love thoughts of folks that were there last night for that ball game. 95-57, I believe, was the final score
big
last night for the Tigers. Hey, it was nice to see Abdul Bashir hit a couple of shots. Mm-hmm. And he looked pretty comfortable.
He also had a moment where Stephen Pearl was clearly furious with his defensive effort, but he's going to to me, with basically everyone but Overton and maybe Murph. Right? Like, the profile seems to be they're going to be offensive players learning to play this style of defense.
I think Elijah Freeman is a guy.
Okay.
And I'm not saying he's perfect defensively, but boy, he's a guy that seems to revel in being able to, you know, steal, disrupt things defensively.
And he seems to try to recover when he makes a mistake, right? Which can blow up in your face, but, like, you know, you can double down on a bad bet, but you can also, like, that effort can bail you out. Right, rather than you hate to see a guy give up on a play, coach, because he made a mistake.
And
Elijah Freeman doesn't seem to have any give up in him. And you know what, Bill, you can that's a start. I mean, when you think like Murph, Overton, and Elijah Freeman giving everything they have defensively is, and we said it yesterday, it just seems like it's so important for, like, as Tahad and Keyshawn Hall go, a lot of this is going to follow.
Right.
Right. Like, and that goes for. Yeah, you know, I'm sure that's. I mean, it's just natural, right? As far as like how leadership tends to form, you know, tends to resemble the list of the best players on the team in a lot of situations.
Yeah, very true for sure.
All right, we're just underway here on the Friday edition of the Drive. Did you talk a little more about the big watch party going on tomorrow?
I mentioned.
I'm sorry, I had to catch that call.
I don't know if I mentioned that it's at Plainsman Park and presented by Kia of Auburn.
How about the fact that it's free and there's free food,
free hamburgers and hot dogs,
prizes,
and you can watch the game.
Yes, it's going to be up on the big screen.
Point that out, too, for some folks still figuring out how they're going to watch tomorrow's game.
Yeah, there are still quite a few folks, including some of us right here in this room, that don't know how we're doing it.
I'm thinking I might come in the studio and watch it. But that's
possible.
I think that's one of the –
could go over to Plainsman Park. I mean, anyway, so, yeah, that's something you'll they've got, I believe, kids' games as well. So, I mean, that could be a fun thing tomorrow. Yeah. Should really be good. It looks like the weather's going to be nice for it.
Big thanks to Kia of Auburn for helping present that. And home base watch party at Plainsman Park tomorrow, an hour before kickoff of the Auburn-Vanderbilt game.
All right, we'll get to our first break of the afternoon. We'll open up the phone lines. Love for you to join in, 334-321-1390, as we're just underway here on the Friday edition of The Drive.
The Drive with Bill Cameron and Dan Peck.
Hey, this is Christian Griffin.
Bill Cameron and Dan Peck on ESPN 106.7. Online at ESPNAU.com. To be a part of The Drive, call 334-321-1390. Toll free at 888-382-7502. Or email TheDrive at ESPNAU.com.
Welcome back in hour number one of the Friday edition of The Drive. Dan Peck, Coach Don Dunn in the house. Bill Cameron's around. He may go see the trainer during the show, and we'll see if he can
taped up.
Yeah, right now his return is questionable. Right now, if I had to put it on the injury,
he's in the tent right now. Yeah, so we don't know.
So we think he could come back, but he's a gamer. You know, Bill Cameron famously tough. wants to play.
He's tough.
So it's one second. I'm tightening the mic thing here before it falls off. Got it. All right. So I hate to do that on the air, but it was
hanging.
It was literally about.
I don't know what they do in here before.
They loosen it. I don't know. It's the night guys. The overnight crew.
The gremlins.
All right. So Auburn, a busy week, Coach.
Yeah.
And you've seen your share of. I mean, you know a lot of people in the industry.
Yeah.
What is, in general, your impression of what you look for out of a team the week they've made a coaching change? This is the first game after a mid-season coaching change.
Fortunately, I was never involved with a mid-season. I was at Montana State, and they dismissed our head coach. I was lucky enough to be what they back then called the holdover coach, which is good and bad because all the old folks hate you. All the new people don't trust you, so it's a tough spot.
It's like living at the airport.
Right. Yeah, or Walmart or wherever that movie was, Toy Store or whatever. Toys R Us or whatever. But anyway, I have never been involved with one during the season. But what I expect with them keeping a name and a popular choice, Coach Durkin as the head man or, you know, interim or whatever you call it, I think the kids will rally behind him. I've got that impression from all the interviews I've seen, watching a little bit of, you know, tape from their practices. Feel like they've got a second win maybe, and I think they're going to be excited to play. They have nothing to lose. All the pressure is on Vanderbilt. This is a big game for Vanderbilt. All the rest of them are. And they've never been in this situation.
Unusually big November game for Vanderbilt. You're right.
And, you know, we always told our kids, and I always made a sign and put in my room, people remember what you do in November every year. And I got that from Johnny Majors. That's not an original thing, and I'm sure he got it from –
I'm going to say you came up with it, though, Coach.
Well, that'd be fine.
When I tell people from now on.
That and about 25 cents might get me something. I doubt it.
Get you a gumball.
Yeah, a gumball. But people remember what you do in November. I think it's a great opportunity for us. It's an afternoon game, which is good. I wish it was an 11 o'clock kick. I always liked those on the road. Didn't like them at home.
Do you remember offhand facing a team that made a coaching change mid-season or was fresh coming off of one? Because that would be, to me, like knowing, you know, like you said, I wasn't worried about the defensive effort last week.
No.
Like, to me, I thought that the
10 points?
Yeah. The way these guys have answered, to me, it's gotten more impressive as the season goes on.
Yeah.
I mean,
because you have had no help.
And the Arkansas game was a perfect moment to break. It would have been a perfect boiling point for this Auburn defense to say, you know what, we can't.
And going into the fourth quarter.
Can't keep doing this. They're on the road. They're going to score. And it's like, no, they answered the bell, and they keep doing it. And
Four times in a row.
With Durkin as the head coach, I would be I'd be surprised if effort was anything of a problem. I do think Vanderbilt's sort of a uniquely challenging defense because the way they run the ball and the fact that they
keep you off the field.
And they've been a ball control offense, but they've hit more big plays in SEC play, and I think that adds up to where even though they've changed from Hugh Freeze to DJ Durkin, the questions remain about the Auburn offense.
Right.
Are they things that can be fixed in four days, or are these problems that were, you know, this was a bed you made in the off season,
right?
And now you're sleeping in it,
right?
And that's, you know, we'll see.
Yeah,
it would be tremendous for DJ Durkin.
Oh yeah,
and I think the rest of this coaching staff,
right?
If you found a way to unlock this Auburn offense,
and get these next three, especially tomorrow.
Yeah, and to do enough, and I don't know if it's simplification. I don't know if it's if it's figuring out which quarterback of the options gives you the best chance and running with him, or if it's going super run heavy like they did after they went from Brian Harsin to Cadillac Williams, that Will Friend offense. Like I don't know. The thought is you need to find something that makes this offense difficult to defend, or these next couple of games, like the two quarterbacks you're facing in SEC play to close this out, Pavia and Simpson.
Yeah,
if they're given opportunity after opportunity because your offense isn't getting anything done, I think they're going to hit a few, right? Like that's just, it's going to keeping either of those quarterbacks quiet for an extended period of time would be maybe the most impressive thing Auburn's defense has done all season. And you're going to probably need to be able to, can you fight off those feelings of resignation if you fall behind? Can you fight off those feelings of,
here we go again?
Yeah. Can you fight that off if the other team hits some shots?
Yeah.
And that's something and that's on the defense.
Right.
But it's also on the offense.
Yeah.
It's also on the offense to respond.
They have to help. They got to be. We need something good to happen early. Score when we're in the red zone.
A big play.
Maybe a bomb to one of the good receivers, or just run the ball. That's what I want to see us do. Run the ball, control the clock, keep their quarterback off the field. He can't beat us when he's on the bench, when he's on the sideline. But, man, he's a competitor now. And I like him. I don't like him tomorrow.
Ooh, yeah. No, hard now, not
he's,
to.
Yeah, he's a little cocky, and maybe he needs to be.
You know what, though? Cocky suggests unearned.
Yeah.
What's this dude done as a college football player except win and prove, like, and, you know, people have been telling him, no, you can't.
All his life.
Yeah. And he goes from under-recruited junior. I mean, the story of, and I know they hammered it home during, I think it was Alabama-Vanderbilt.
Right.
The thought that, like, this guy didn't have any D1 offers and faced a guy in a junior college playoff game who did.
Yeah.
And outplayed him
and
took his offer, and that's how he ended up at New Mexico State.
Of all places.
And the rest is history. Like it is. It's a movie. Like I understand that, you know, some of the attitude may rub some people the wrong way, but like you said, competitor a team with 22 guys as good and as confident as Diego Pavia would be difficult to beat.
Yes.
Like a team with everyone with that. So I get that, there's a place for humility.
Right.
And there's a place for
confidence.
Know, yeah, but no, yeah. I think cocky to me is the ooh, the Zach Calzada story doesn't look good at all, by the way. I don't know. Have you been following?
No, I just saw him holding up.
Yeah, I guess he responded on social media to a guy with a picture of himself flashing a lot of NIL cash, and it's rubbed a lot of Kentucky fans the wrong way. A guy who's seen as a poor investment by the football team flaunting the money that he's earned.
Is he still on the team?
I believe he's currently the backup. He was in uniform. Right. I think he was at Auburn.
Yeah.
So you know he's.
Well, if I had anything to do with Kentucky football, I'd be walking on eggshells.
As of last night, he was still on the team. Yeah. I don't know if anything's changed. In the last day or so. But no, to me,
you know, in the old days. They'd have got him, but now it's legal.
You know, Lexington's Lexington's a town that'll take care of
something
like that.
Yeah.
In the face of stuff like that, Pavia is a tremendous Hold on, we got Christian. Come on in. What are you looking for your keys? Yeah, you can come on in. I get that Pavia is not everybody's favorite flavor, but
right.
You don't want to root for him obviously when he's facing Auburn, but good Lord, this kid, he's relentless. The story going around now that I know Tommy Tuberville's not the only one that saw Diego Pavia come to Jordan-Hare Stadium in 2023 and think, boy, maybe the answer's staring you in the face as to what you do at quarterback and what this thing might be missing. But it is interesting that, I think Auburn's not the only school that got a good look at Diego Pavia over the last couple of seasons and thought, we're going to go in a different direction. And now if they could have that decision back, maybe they would think, we saw the answer and we passed on it. And now it could, it's like the line in Ghostbusters, right? Now it's coming to bite you. I think that's it's a Jaws, right?
Yeah.
You're gonna ignore this problem till it swims up,
right?
And that would be for Auburn tomorrow a superior defensive effort. I think in the fire of what you're facing against a team, because you know the other side of Vanderbilt playing in November, a big game in November is they're gonna be there.
Yeah,
like you've been able to go to Vanderbilt in November in previous seasons as an SEC road team
and have the stadium to yourself
and run the and have can be a neutral site game or worse.
Oh yeah,
right, like a takeover.
Like I remember, was it last year maybe? Or
Tennessee's done it a couple.
Yeah,
of times.
Yeah, they just take over.
Tennessee's done it a couple of times because of
that's
Nashville.
That's what I was
going
to say. Tennessee.
I think during division play when Ole Miss was good, Ole Miss would do that too. And it's like when you had to deal with that.
You know, everybody wants to go spend the weekend in Nashville.
I don't think that's going to be the case tomorrow.
I don't. Either.
I think
we'll be well represented, but I hope.
Yeah, I think it's going to be black and gold.
And I know.
I was at Baylor. I know how the Auburn fans, when they're on board, I know how they can travel and they can represent.
Yeah.
The week of a coaching change. Who knows? Yeah. I wonder what the Auburn contingent looks like tomorrow. And I just think it would be easy for that thing to be a hornet's nest of Vanderbilt fans.
Yeah, it's going to be an interesting game. It really is.
And
I'm looking forward to it.
Your point about 11 a.m. versus 2 or 3.
Yeah.
I know people love the night games. In my experience, fan bases can get tired in the second half of night games because they've been going
late kickoff.
They've been going all day long.
Yeah.
And sometimes I've seen fan bases slow down in the second half. 2 o'clock, 3 o'clock, it's a hornet's nest all game long. If Auburn can quiet things down, that'd be fantastic. But it would be, it'd be a real feather in the cap of this new coaching staff because –
you get that win, you got a week off, then you can really tweak what you want to, not just crazy, but you can tweak what you need, and then you got Mercer at home, and then we got the Iron Bowl, which anything can happen.
I would say if you can find offensive answers tomorrow, that would leave you thinking, well, with the defense you've played so far and with some offensive answers, like maybe, and with a couple of weeks to get ready, like maybe that home game against Alabama is more interesting than it seems like it is, it seems like it is right now on paper. With Jackson and Ashton, I wonder how much, I wonder how much data you get before you realize, like, before you can reach a conclusion.
Yeah.
Right? Like, if you're doing the scientific method, right, and you're testing out
hypotheses,
it just feels like with those two guys, They've both played a lot of college football,
mm-hmm.
and expecting one of them to suddenly get a lot better
yeah.
than the quarterback they've been is asking a lot. And in the case of Deuce, like, I think it's kind of striking and shocking that with his Auburn tenure on the line, Hugh Freeze at no point thought, you know, maybe people will be more forgiving, maybe there will be some more grace if the offense is struggling with the five-star freshman on the field instead of the upperclassman. I might have pulled that lever at some point this year, Coach, when I saw the other two quarterbacks struggling and thinking, if we're going to struggle on offense, let's struggle with the guy who has the most upside and the guy who could most realistically be next year's starting quarterback.
Yeah, experience, right.
And I don't know if that's a commentary on Deuce. The fact that Hugh Freeze never thought to do that at any point during conference play and, in fact, got let go without ever – I mean, the thought that you with your Auburn tenure on the line, you didn't think, hey, maybe I push that button.
Try something else.
I don't know. Well, and he did try Ashton eventually.
But I'm saying, try the, quote, the best athlete.
I might have thought, and it's easy for me to say as someone who, like, doesn't know exactly what you're going to get out of Deuce in the game.
Right.
It seems like that would have been a consideration before now, even with the redshirt stuff. I mean, just to win games. Like, the other two guys weren't giving you winning football to this point. Mm-hmm. And at least if you're, like, it feels like it would be easier to swallow losing football from a true freshman quarterback and than now it would be with from the other portal, two. If you get losing football.
Right, and now with the portal, why do you worry about the red shirt? I mean, the guy may not be here anyway.
No.
So, I'm like...
You're out here worried about 2029?
You're worried about today. Nowadays, these knuckleheads.
How
many coaches are out of work?
You think you're gonna have a job in 2029 if you're worried about stuff like that?
No,
right now
you might have a job, but it's not gonna be at all.
Not gonna be here.
It might be 7-Eleven or something.
Not gonna be making this decision. Yeah. No, I just and it doesn't. I mean, based on what DJ Durkin had to say this week, it still sounds like the primary options at quarterback Saturday will be Ashton and Jackson. Maybe there's a belief that if you haven't been getting Deuce ready to go in, it's kind of unfair to him to just throw him out there. I would have thought long and hard about getting him ready to go in,
mm-hmm.
Before now. This is short-sighted, but I think it's true. That if you felt like the answer at quarterback was on the team right now, Hugh Freeze might still be here. If you had the feeling that you didn't have to start over at that position after this season was over, and Hugh Freeze had already whiffed a couple of times when you started over at quarterback and let him go get somebody, if you thought that, then he might still be here. But instead, you didn't feel through six SEC games, you thought that you were directionless at that position, adrift, and that was enough for Auburn to cut bait. And I just wonder, an extended look at Deuce might have done some good.
Yeah.
I don't know, and it's easy for me to say now.
Right.
And it's revisionist history to an extent, although I thought Deuce should have been elevated to the backup after Georgia. I think I said that on the air, so it's not hindsight.
Right.
Go back and I think I said it that week. Yeah. But I just think that at some point when it became existential, maybe you think about Coach, you were there when Auburn made the switch from Brandon to Cody.
Yeah.
When things weren't going well.
Yeah.
And that's a senior
right.
with a decorated Auburn career.
Right.
20 plus career starts.
Right.
Who isn't playing well to start the season, and they go with the true freshman because, it's do or die out there.
Yes, it is.
I just wonder if that's something, and we'll see if they view, because again, it's easy to say a lot of this with the big mystery of who knows how Deuce would actually play,
right,
if he was out there. But I just think it would have. Just viewing it from if you're trying to strategize how to keep your job, maybe folks would be more tolerant of a situation where this offense is struggling, but it's a guy making his college football debut,
right,
struggling in the position rather than a guy who's shown you a lot as a quarterback already, and you're trying to fix him. You're trying to
survive.
And you're trying to reverse trends.
Yeah,
with sort
yeah,
of an upperclassman.
Things.
Mike Leach was big on quarterbacks develop habits, and right, if you get one too late, You're not gonna change those habits.
Right,
you're not gonna
right,
break. You know, those habits get harder to break.
That's true.
I don't know. I would have thought that at some point going and I would say go youth movement elsewhere. But there weren't a ton of great candidates who weren't already playing, right? When you're looking at benching upperclassmen for younger players, DJ Durkin was asked at the press conference on Monday, "Hey, who else of the freshmen who haven't played very much, who might get out there more?" He didn't really have an answer because I think most of the guys they think that can help them
have been playing. Yeah.
And maybe that's your answer.
That's
on,
true.
And maybe that's your answer on Deuce as to why they didn't think to push that button. But I just, you know, once this became, hey, you might not see November if, like, you know, or you might not see very many days in November if this thing continues on the trajectory it's on. I don't know. I would have thought that's like, you have the emergency break glass, right? You got the thing and they do it. It's because it has to be a genuine emergency, right? If you're going to break this glass and push this button or flip this switch. I don't know when you needed to break the glass and flip the Deuce Knight switch.
Yeah.
But I would have seriously considered doing it probably all October long.
Yeah.
And instead, you've got an interim head coach and a new guy calling the plays on the offense in Coach Nix.
That's true.
We'll take a break. 334-321-1390 is the number to dial. Love to hear from you as we talk a little bit Auburn basketball, a little bit of some of Auburn's game tomorrow. The rest of the slate in the SEC tomorrow as well.
Got some big high school playoff games
tonight.
High
school playoff games tonight and a whole lot more. Stick around. This is The Drive.
Or email us at thedrive@espnau.com.
Welcome back into the Friday
Drive.
I'm back.
It's back.
That was pretty quick. Something came up. I had some things planned for Monday, and as a result, they got changed. So I had to change around some other. Let me tell you. I want to tell you a little bit about where I was, what I was doing, taking advantage of. You know, look, I mentioned I had some knee surgery a while back, and since then, obviously you can't be as active, so I've been sitting around and gained probably more than a few pounds and just feeling tired and listless.
Yeah.
And, hey, the opportunity came up. It's like, yeah, let's try Game Day Men's Health. You know, they are here in town out at Moores Mill on the way out to Hamilton. When you go, when you're on your way out to Hamilton Place, just before you get to Moores Mills Golf Club, they're out there and they can take care of guys if you're feeling tired, listless, you don't have the energy or the drive you used to have, and if you need to lose a few pounds, they're great. I'll tell you what, it was really good going in, had a long consultation with Aaron, went over medical history, they did blood work, and came up with the best plan, and I thought I was going to miss this week's because I had a little something coming up on Monday. That got pushed back, so, yeah, I had the opportunity to run out there and see them, and you should as well, guys. I mean, if you want to feel better, one of the things I said to them is, man, I'm tired of being tired, and they said, that's a good one. Yeah, if you're tired of being tired, you want to feel that energy, that they can take care of you, and I mean, again, it's very, very thorough at Game Day Men's Health.
Yeah, happy to be able to fill in a segment there, Bill, while you consulted.
Yeah, appreciate it.
Consulted with the good folks at Men's Health. Talked a little bit about and you know, we talked during the commercial break about it too, like, and I preface it with all, like, it's easy to sit here and say, hey, you should play the backup quarterback.
Oh, yeah.
We've been battling that for
when it's not your job on the line, it's a whole lot easier to do that.
That might have been the subject of the very first episode of The Drive. Like, that might have been the subject of, like, one of the very first episodes of, like, the history of sports talk radio. It was like, should the backup quarterback take the job instead? And I don't know what Deuce provides in terms of trying to win football games relative to Ashton or Jackson. I wonder if
I think he's a bit more of a gunslinger, and that's something Auburn has not had, that sort of attack mode.
I just wonder if it would have been easier to tolerate, especially since the Georgia game. I wonder if it would have been easier to tolerate Auburn's offense struggling.
Yeah, you could say, well, it's a true freshman, and you can't expect him to be, clicking on all cylinders.
Would that have saved Hugh Freeze's job?
I don't know.
I don't know. If the results are the same, but it's with Deuce, and you score 3 points against Kentucky, I don't know.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like, I don't know. Mm-hmm. But I wonder if it would have been easier. In a search for understanding, I think you might have found a little bit more understanding from Auburn fans.
Yeah, I agree. Hugh was talking patience after the Kentucky game about he wished he had it, but he understood why not. That might have created a little more patience in the fan base.
You want to try Keith?
Yeah, let's do that before we get to our final break. Hey, Keith.
Hey, yeah, I was just talking about the coaching search and, the Tulane coach and the Georgia Tech coach, they just for some reason remind me of a young Pat Dye, the way they carry themselves. And
a lot of people making the John Sumrall Pat Dye comparison, and I don't I think John Sumrall checks a lot of boxes for a lot of people as far as what you would want in sort of if you were in broad strokes describing personality, right, and different things like that, as well as resume.
Well, he understands the Southeastern Conference. He understands football in the state of Alabama, and he has won, and he is a tough, hard-nosed, straight-shooting kind of guy.
Marcello mentioned in the Auburn piece that he wrote this week I guess I'd heard this, that Ginny Sumrall,
yeah, his wife's an Auburn alum.
Is an Auburn graduate, yes, from the Tuberville era. Probably was here in the 2000s.
Yeah, well, I think those guys, any of those guys would be good. And the Sumrall, I saw him, when he was at Troy, and didn't know anything about him, and kind of just followed the Troy games, and their offense just reminded me of a well-tuned machine. It's kind of like a Bill Clark offense. Like, I was kind of a Bill Clark fan on the last couple of coaching searches. And, his offense usually works, and the team plays hard, and, it just everything just goes together. But as far as the quarterbacks,
Who Tulane's offensive coordinator is, real quick? Is Joe Craddock, who's a familiar name to a lot of people. He was the offensive coordinator at Troy as well, but he was a quarterback back in the day. Was he at Arkansas too? I mean, Joe Craddock, who's a longtime UAB offensive coordinator. Joe Craddock's a decorated guy who would either be if someone snapped up John Sumrall, I think Joe Craddock would be a candidate to take over there. He would also be potentially the new offensive coordinator at whatever school hires John Sumrall.
Right. Well, our next offensive coordinator or next coach, if they say that they need a running quarterback to make their offense work, don't hire them because, that's kind of a one-man show. There's nothing wrong with a running quarterback a quarterback that can run, but, when a team has to have a depend on that and is kind of all built around a running quarterback, if it just falls like that and you have to do that to make your team, your offense work, that's one thing. But, to have an offense built on that, I just don't believe in it. You need a team offense built on your running backs, your wide receivers, and, kind of like what Bo Nix is doing. If the opportunity is there or, occasionally call a play for him, but, you're primarily there to throw the ball or hand it off to your running back.
And I should have led with this. Joe Craddock was Bill Clark's offensive coordinator for a couple of years at UAB.
Bill Clark.
Yeah, he was there 20 to 22 as the OC at UAB when they were putting up pretty good numbers for Coach Clark. And now he's with John Sumrall. So when you said the offense looked familiar to what Bill Clark was running at UAB, same offense coordinator.
Yeah, well, that's the kind of coach that I would like to have. He's kind of like a Pat Dye. It's just everything works. You're not dependent on one thing, and then if you have one thing that really is good, you ride it, and that's what any good coach should do, I think. But if they do decide to go for a search committee or some kind of advice, I'd nominate Don Dunn and and the Cole Kublik. I mean, that would be the two guys I'd have.
That's a couple of guys that know that should know what they're looking for. Good stuff. Appreciate the call. We need to get to our final break of hour number one. Come on in and join us here on the Friday Drive.
The Drive with Bill Cameron and Dan Peck. U.com.
Welcome back in. Final few minutes of hour number one of the Friday Drive. Bill, Dan, Coach Don Dunn, and Clay is up next. Hey, Clay.
Hey, good afternoon, fellas. This question is really, I want to send this one to Coach Dunn more so than you and Dan. I assume that Coach Durkin is going to move down to the field and be on the field coaching this weekend. Do we know that for sure or not?
Yes.
Yeah. Or I would be very surprised if he was not.
Well, he's not going to pull a Bill, you ain't my brother Oliver job and head coach from the press box.
No.
Okay.
Hadn't DJ been on the field?
DJ's been he's been a head coach before too.
Right.
So he's
he calls the game from the field.
Yes.
Already.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. That was going to be my question: is the difference from sitting in the press box or the whatever you call the sky box and calling the defensive plays and seeing the whole field? But if he's already been calling them,
right? That's not going to be the big difference. Is going to be when Auburn has the ball, instead of being able to go over and be with the defense, he's obviously got to be watching the field and be ready in case there's a penalty, there's any kind of question or decisions to be made.
Yeah.
So it's about to go or that type of thing.
It's about sort of deciding what to delegate and what you've personally handled.
And now he'll have a headset that switches both offense, defense. And he may have had that already. Now the head coach always has both, where you can switch over to anybody on offense and anybody on defense.
All right, well, that makes me feel even better, because that was only the concern I had was if his, you know, what you see is different. It's like sitting in the upper deck or
it's definitely different.
You know,
but if that's
the way he calls them, you know, when that makes me feel good. So
it's good.
I just asked a question that didn't even need to be asked.
No, it's a good no.
Yeah, it's a good question.
That's a really good question. I think folks are wondering, like, what's going to be different for Coach Durkin on game day now that he's the head coach as opposed to just the defensive coordinator. And the answer is there are some things.
He'll quickly probably make as many quick defensive adjustments and then switch right over.
All right, we are out of time here in hour number. Appreciate the call, Clay. Really good stuff.
How about this? He wasn't in charge of timeouts. Before Saturday. Yeah, that's something else he's going to have to.
There are other things, yes. Definitely he'll have to be concerned with tomorrow.
Yeah, he'll have somebody watching that, too.
All right, we've got to get to our top of the hour break. Halfway done, who have we got?
Jeremy,
if you can, hang on. You'll be up first at hour number two of the Friday Drive.
The Drive with Bill Cameron and Dan Peck on ESPN 106.7 and online at ESPNAU.com. To be a part of The Drive, call 334-321-1390, toll free at 888-382-7502, or email The Drive at ESPNAU.com.
Welcome into hour number two of the Friday Drive. Bill, Dan, Coach Don Dunn on a day where we got some rain, then it cleared up. Hopefully it stays that way for some big-time high school football tonight. First round of the playoffs, Auburn High looking to avenge its first loss of the season as they host Vestavia tonight. That ball game coming up on Wings 94.3, airtime 6:30. Meanwhile, over on AU 100, same airtime for Lee Scott and Hale County. So it's high school postseason football tonight, and you can hear a couple of those games right here on our network of stations.
Yeah, looking forward to coverage of high school football tonight on ESPN or on Wings 94.3 and Lee Scott Academy as well. I mean, some exciting high school football action.
Do or die
going on tonight. Yeah.
Meanwhile, Auburn with its first game under interim head coach DJ Durkin heading to Nashville. Well, they're in Nashville where they'll take on the Vanderbilt Commodores tomorrow, 3:00 on the SEC Network. We'd love your thoughts on, you know, where we are now, the coaching situation. What do you expect from tomorrow? Any of the other ball games going on as well? Or we can talk more about basketball from last night, where Auburn trounced Merrimack 95-57. Our phone lines are open, 334-321-1390. And that, of course, is the Drive hotline sponsored by Skybar.
So if I have the bracket correct, or no, I don't want to get this wrong. We'll do the playoff bracket a little bit later on in the show.
Let's get to the phones, because Jeremy's been hanging on since the end of hour number one. Hey, Jeremy.
Didn't want to preempt Jeremy.
No, not at all. No, never want to do that.
Hey, buddy.
Dan, this is really going to be for you. You've been pretty hard on the quarterbacks this week. Do you believe they are capable of playing SEC football?
I think that next year's quarterback's probably not on the team.
Here you go, Jeremy. Yeah. I think that with the right game plan and play calling, they can win SEC games. I wouldn't say that
Based on what I've seen so far from both of them, Jeremy, if we're talking about Ashton and Jackson, I would say it feels like it's going to be real tough to design a game plan for an SEC offense with either of those guys that's gonna be capable of doing enough. And maybe that's a roundabout way of saying no, but like I think that's probably how I would answer it.
I disagree. I've seen enough of Jackson. Like, he throws the ball well enough. He's mobile. Now, I do agree with y'all. I think that guy could make a fortune doing what Taysom Hill does. But the idea that they can't play quarterback, I think we are so predictable, or we have been so predictable across the board,
yep,
that it makes it impossible for anybody to play quarterback. It's why Peyton Thorne struggled, because that's not a guy that just suddenly forgot how to throw the ball coming from Michigan State to Auburn. I think our predictability, whether it's in like pass pro, like the protections that we use. Hugh Freeze said something at the end of the press conference last week that like really got to this point to me. Jason Caldwell asked him if he ever thought about going max protect to try to help.
Yeah,
his reply was, "We did that every third down." If you're that predictable, if he's doing it on every third down, the other team knows he's doing it on every third down. During the course of games, if you're that predictable with your pass protections or your run game, how you run the ball, I trust Derek Nix coming into this weekend. I know he hasn't had a whole lot of time, but this is a guy that has coached with Houston Nutt. He has coached with
Lane.
Oh, he's not a Hugh Freeze disciple that's been that's been rolling with Hugh Freeze for a long time, which I feel like people assumed most of this coaching staff was.
I feel better going into this game about our chances to actually generate some offense and move the ball. Look, people didn't think Jason Campbell could play quarterback. There were people that thought
I think you saw more out of either of those guys in like 2003 or 2019 when they were under fire than you have this year. I'd love to be wrong. Like, I would love to see the answer at quarterback next year emerge between now and the end of the season. And if that happens, you give tremendous credit to DJ Durkin and you give tremendous credit to Derek Nix. If you can change the course of what's happened this year. But I've said it before, Jeremy, like, this feels like one of those years where one of the reasons you're making a coaching change is because he went into the season with not enough at the quarterback position, like Tuberville in 08 and like Chizik in 12 and like Harsin in 22.
Hey, look, I'm just one of those guys that the right coach with the right system, any of these guys, the different levels in talent between these guys from school to school, you know, they're, at least from just a pure athletic ability, is minuscule. Some quarterbacks quarterbacks are a little bit more accurate, but you're talking about the difference between being able to throw a ball into a bucket versus throwing it into a phone booth.
I would love for it to turn out to be more of a play calling issue than a quarterback problem, because Jackson Arnold's got eligibility remaining. Right, like if you can unlock him between now and the end of the season, that provides I think even more optimism for next year than you currently have.
He may not be the guy. Like I'm perfectly willing to admit, I agree with you. We've seen a lot of football from him. He hasn't necessarily made anybody around him better. He doesn't do anything that uplifts your whole team. But at the same time, like, Ben Lear got to an SEC championship game. I really don't think we have given anyone a chance to play quarterback for the last two seasons. That's kind of where I come from.
The offense was sort of an anchor that would have yep. doomed. You know, and I get some. I thought that you were scheming yourself into trouble more with Thorne than you were this year. Like this year, I think it's about trying to, like, how do you have an offense when it's a short list of stuff your quarterback's good at? With Thorne, I thought he gave you a fighting chance. Thorne had and Thorne had more of a track record than either of these guys do as a Division I quarterback too. Like earlier in the season, I think I was there where it's like, you got to tinker the offense and find out what these guys are good at and do that. I'm starting to struggle to answer the question of what your quarterbacks are good at a, you know, as far as, you know, what do they do at an above average level as a Division I quarterback? It's tough because running can't be the only answer to that. Like you're too easy to defend if the thing your quarterback if the thing your quarterback is good at, as far as what does he do at an above average level at D1, if the answer to that question is run, your offense is in big trouble. Like it's got to be something else. And I think so far this year, like maybe play calling's a big reason why, but it's tough to answer that question with anything but run.
I think they're 4 scores a game good at quarterback. How about that? Like I think with those guys at quarterback, you should be able to generate 4 scores on offense without needing help from the defense, special teams, whatever. You should be able to get 4 scores from those guys. I think they're good enough to do that.
Are you four touchdowns?
That would win us ball games.
And not if he's talking about 12 points, Bill.
Yeah. Like, I mean, I don't know about 4 touchdowns. I think Auburn ought to be able to score 25 points a game. I think they're talented enough to score score better than 24 a game.
That's where I am. Like you with this defense and those guys, I've seen enough of them, and I've seen enough other quarterbacks to know like these guys aren't like drastically untalented quarterbacks. I just think we have handcuffed and handicapped them to a point where they can't show.
I would love for that to turn out to be the case, like over the next couple of weeks. If you get more evidence of that because they succeed with a new offense and some new ideas on that side of the ball, it would be more of an indictment of Hugh Freeze. But it would be a really positive development for this team, especially with, you know, trying to win games down the stretch. Let's get to it. You want to do Anthony?
Yeah. Hey, Anthony.
How you doing, sir? Come in, Auburn alumni, for giving Hugh Freeze 3 years. They did let him come in and his recruits, you know, come get to play, but he shot himself in the foot. I disagree with the caller, 2 callers away. The people in the press box see the field more. They should be the ones calling the plays, not the head coach. And also, I agree with the last caller that we haven't given none of the quarterbacks the ability to play to their talent. The play calling has been killing them. We let Bo Nix get away. He went to Oregon. Look at him shining in the NFL. The last time we had a great Auburn team, we had 2 running quarterbacks. So that's not, you know, handicap. To have a running and passing quarterback is an advantage.
Well, no, and passing. Like, running and passing quarterback is one
thing. Right, Carnett. But you get me. Last time Auburn was great, we had some talented quarterbacks who were versatile. But that's all I got to say. Y'all have
great stuff.
Appreciate it, Anthony. We got time for another one before we get to our first break of hour two.
I think we got Spectre.
Hey, Spectre.
What's up, buddy?
Hey, guys. Once again, I'll answer Jeremy's question, too. It's not the quarterbacks, guys. These guys are good college quarterbacks. All right, Bo Nix, what year was that, 21? All right, after 21, he left because of the offensive line. And we haven't had a successful quarterback since then because of the offensive line. The play calling is part of it. But if you cannot block, if you cannot block on pass plays and you're okay sometimes on running plays, you're not going to be successful as a running back or a quarterback or a receiver for that matter. But people, listen to me. We have got to get an offensive line. How long is that going to take? Are we going to have one next year? Are we going to go in the portal and get all experienced offensive linemen? Something's got to give.
You got five seniors on the O-line this year, Spectre, and it's like the thought that you're going to dig. I mean, I don't know how many we're talking about quarterbacks. Some I don't know how many next year starters on the offensive line team right now. You think Connor Lou's probably one of them?
Let me say this, Dan. We have a bunch of linemen on the roster. I don't understand why they getting experience. Are they all going to be sophomores next year coming in there?
Spectre, that's one thing. One thing, and Don, I want you to chime in here. It's really difficult to play backup offensive linemen. I mean, especially when you've got games on the line. I mean, there aren't many teams anywhere unless you have blowouts. If you have big blowouts, you can get players in, but it's really difficult to play your young offensive linemen when you're competing in close games the way Auburn has been. Yeah. But I think Auburn's got some talent in the young offensive linemen. They haven't been developed or they haven't played the way anyone expected this year. I don't think Auburn is by any means, I don't think the cupboard's bare as far as talent. Now, you don't know who's going to be around next year because of the portal.
You know, we would have known about this offensive line a long time ago if we'd have been playing our number one defense against our number one offense. We would have known where our offensive weaknesses would have been.
Spectre, that's what they did. Spectre, that's what they did in the preseason. They did that.
Yeah, well, what is it that I heard earlier about Freeze telling Durkin not to play?
The thinking about trying to keep Jackson as confident as possible and having
Durkin. But don't
Durkin
think that the defensive
punches,
line
but,
and offensive lines weren't having battles.
No, I mean, I want to say I don't think Spectre's wrong, but I would point out that Hugh Freeze himself, going into the season, said he's got NFL people telling him all five of the starters and Tutol felt like legitimate NFL prospects. I forget the exact phrasing. Said they were all draftable. According to the NFL people that he's talking to. Hugh Freeze was adamant that he did not have a talent problem on the offensive line going into this season. He's not here anymore, and that might be part of the reason why. But he was absolutely.
I think the missing word was potential. They all had potential, but they couldn't execute.
Yeah. I've made this joke before, Spectre. I think when he was talking about draftable, I think he might have been talking about the military. I don't know if he was talking about. I don't know if he was talking about the NFL, but it's that was something we wondered about was, you know, how much of the first 2 years were struggles because of an offensive line that didn't give you a fighting chance, and how much of it was problems like receiver talent and play calling and quarterback and other things. Hugh Freeze was adamant. Bill, you were there for these. Hugh Freeze was certain he did not have a talent problem on the offensive line.
Oh, absolutely.
Going into this season, and that might be another swing and a miss, Spectre.
Yes. Well, I just hope your listeners are really trying to put this together, that the offensive line has got to be there.
Oh, it does. I mean, there's no question, and I'd be very surprised. I mean, I fully expect it with a new head coach there. There'll be quite a few new assistant coaches as well. So
yeah.
that's where everybody's going to look.
Let me give you my score before I go, because I'm gonna pick Vandy 23-13.
Mm-hmm. You just think it's gonna be too tough for for the Auburn defense to hold them off the board as much as you need to?
What are we talking about? What were we just talking about? Offensive line. How's he gonna adjust that? Ain't no playbook in the world can make a guy block better.
I think we need to run the ball. That'll help your offensive line.
You did see the offensive line play, and I think the overall play change when you went from Harsin to Cadillac as far as like sort of the new approach and abandoning a pro-style West Coast offense sort of inspired passing attack for an offense that was just going to run, and they didn't care if they were going to run 75% of the time. That was how they adjusting the offense to the personnel had been something we'd wondered about. You know, you wonder if you need to adjust this to a really run-heavy attack these last couple of games.
Coach, what happens when the defense adjusts against the run?
Well, you just keep running it. That's my philosophy. And then you go to your play action, and that should open up the short passing game. You know, get the ball out on the perimeter, swing pass, things like that. But I agree with Bill. The offensive line is the toughest position to bring along and coach. Now, the reasons behind it, I don't know.
Well, I understand that completely, but that's what practice is all about. That's when you get these young guys out there and start getting them on that line during practice. I mean, sitting on the bench or sitting on the sideline watching the number one offense run all the time, it just doesn't make any sense to me. We should have already developed some linemen already. You get one. You got a 17-year-old. Okay, a 17-year-old. What happened to the other lineman on there? That just don't make any sense to me. I'm sorry.
There are folks saying, line of scrimmage is one of the things you need to prioritize with the next guy. Track record, and figuring out sort of in what direction you go. And Spectre, I think that would be welcome news for our buddy Spectre. Good stuff, pal.
All right, we'll get to our first break of hour number two. Plenty of time for you to join us here on the Friday Drive.
The Drive with Bill Cameron and Dan Peck. ESPN 106.7 and online at AU.com. To be a part of The Drive, call 334-321-1390. Toll free at 888-382-7502 or email The Drive at ESPNAU.com.
Welcome back into the Drive here on this Friday. Bill, Dan, Coach Don Dunn, 334-321-1390. That's the Drive hotline. We've got calls holding.
Yeah, who's up next?
Hello?
Caller, you're on.
Hey, you there?
Yeah.
Hey.
Yeah, who we got?
It's Alan.
Hey, Alan.
So in Durkin's introductory press conference, did he or did he not say something about being more aggressive on offense? Did I hear that correctly?
Yes. I mean, I don't know that he specifically said aggressive, but he wants them to play like the defense, and that the defense is aggressive. I mean, I think this will be much more of an attack style. I don't know if that means tempo, but I do think that I think they're going to take more shots than Auburn was taking.
The reason I ask is I was watching the Kentucky game again yesterday. And
sorry.
The very first part, and the offensive line is so passive, and just not well, a non-athletic for one thing, but just passive. I mean, they're not putting up, they're accepting the blows. In other words, they're just receiving the licks instead of putting a lick on the defensive lineman. And I just wonder if that's what he's talking about. Maybe just, stop worrying about finessing and the RPO style blocking and just blowing straight ahead. I don't know. I hope so. I hope that's what he's talking about. Could they change something like that at this point?
That's a really good question, Don.
Yeah, I don't know how much change you can do.
You're talking about guys who have started a ton of games, too.
I think something that we maybe hadn't talked about enough, losing that center might have hurt us more than we thought. Just with help with the calls, the confidence. You get out there in a huddle and you're looking for some – or when they do huddle, or I don't even think they huddle
all
the time.
Well, actually, they huddled more this past week.
Yeah, and I think they might go back to huddling more. which I think is a good thing. Now you're running the clock. That's a great question, but I think that's hurt us a lot more than we realize with his leadership. You know, he made all the calls. I'm not saying the young kid. I think the young kid's going to be fine, but you don't know
if he's getting them
lined up or the protections, the calls. Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's a tough deal.
Well, that leads me to the second part of the question. When they're at the line, I noticed on one play, Auburn lined up, and then they got up and they looked at the sideline, and I guess they got a new play. I don't know what they do when they do that. They
right.
got a new play.
Yes, sir.
And then the defensive lineman made a subtle
stem
step, and he went inside to the gap instead of being like head up. And I don't guess anybody noticed that. Maybe they did, maybe they didn't, but you know, it made a difference in the play because that's where the runner went.
Right.
And it was a pulling guard, and the guard is slow, and it just got stuffed.
Yeah.
And it seems like somebody needs to be up there noticing that and giving a heads up to everybody, but it didn't happen. I don't know. Maybe that's the center. I don't know.
Yeah, the speed of the game, everything happens so fast, but you're right.
The change they are making this week is at center. Right, like I mean, the swap they've made.
That's what we saw on Tuesday. It looked like Mason Murphy, who'd been right tackle, was the first guy out there at center, and then Tutal Miller back out of right tackle.
That might help, but you know, as a defensive line coach, I always wanted to try to hold my guys. And like you're saying, we called it stemming when they move at the last second, right before the snap. That does cause a lot of confusion with the line, the offensive line for sure, and. You know, that's tough, and it just take experience. But, again, a lot of that's by the design of the play. You know, where are we going? Are we blocking to the right? Are we blocking to the left? Are we doubling? Are we combo blocking? All those things. So there's a lot going on, really are.
Yeah. And the running back, again, the running back should see that as well.
Yes, I mean, he's got to have eyes. That's what you want, a guy that can break it off. It's not going to be perfect. You're exactly right. Got to have great eyes out of the running backs.
All right, thanks.
Appreciate the phone call. Yeah, great stuff. You want to get to Pat before we take a break?
Yeah, we got time.
Hey buddy. Pat.
Hey, guys. I got to help me understand this. Okay, so when I heard the news of Notre Dame, I was like, okay, great. I mean, my business is going to totally boom. I get that. But I'm just thinking to myself, you know, you obviously know who I think we should get. And I guess my question is, if he's not going to be the guy – I can't understand to me, Cohen's job is on the line on this next coach. If this coach comes in and he makes 2 years just like this one, 3 years, and then he's gone, there's no way that we're going to keep Cohen. I mean, I just don't believe that Auburn would keep him after two dismal hires.
Hard to imagine a scenario where Cohen hires the next coach, it doesn't work out,
and
then John Cohen gets to hire the
replacement. Exactly.
You think John Cohen doesn't realize that?
Yeah.
I agree. And so if you were John Cohen and money is not the issue and you could pick any coach out there, you could pick the guy from Mississippi State, you could pick the guy from Notre Dame, you could take Durkin, you could take a lot of people that actually have credentials. But the name that keeps coming up that drives me insane is Sumrall. And I think it's almost like it's a ploy. I mean, Brandon Marcello says Auburn should follow the creed. Well, I thought Brandon Marcello always talks badly of Auburn. So I'm like, well, if he's wanting us to get that guy. And so then they go, oh, let's throw Pat Dye's name out there. That's going to get a rise out of every Auburn fan. And then they say, oh, LSU wants him. Well, does LSU really want him? LSU just said they want to wait till as long as it takes to get the best guy possible.
No, LSU wants Lane.
So they want Lane. So they never wanted Sumrall. That was thrown out there. So Auburn people would go, wow, Sumrall, LSU wants Sumrall. LSU never wanted Sumrall.
How do you
go from Lane Kiffin to Sumrall? You don't.
I think some of the stuff this week has felt like it reeked of representatives throwing stuff out there, feelers out there. When all of a sudden it's like a lot of biographical
agents.
Information about Dillingham or about John Sumrall is getting
Eli.
Out there. Eli Drinkwitz.
Yeah.
It's like, yeah, that's. I wonder how much of that is.
Well, Well, I don't even mind those because those actually are coaching at Power Five conferences. Summerall didn't even coach a Power Five team one year.
Do you view moving on from Lane for a sec? Do you view Drinkwitz and Dillingham as better options than Summerall for that reason?
I think Summerall is the absolute worst coach, and I'll tell you why. He might be great, but I think I don't understand what Cohen is thinking. If you're not going to get Lane, okay, theoretically you're not going to get Lane. And you're honestly thinking about getting Summerall, okay? Are you literally going to go and add Notre Dame when we have to play Texas A&M, Oklahoma, Alabama, Georgia, and then you're going to make our home schedule add Notre Dame to the home schedule? I mean, I understand for the fans it'd be a great game, but it's going to be a game where the Notre Dame fans are going to be cheering and staying up all night partying because there's no way. That's the second year. If he starts out the first year, Summerall, let's say we got a vast departure of a lot of people because I think they probably would. J-Boy said, you know, we're probably not going to keep Durkin. I wouldn't stay if I was Durkin. You're going to hire a defensive coordinator.
Not under a younger defensive coach,
yeah,
probably.
Exactly. No. So you're going to have a lot of transfers. And so then the portal's going to open, and a lot of people are going to transfer, and I don't blame them. And so now we're going to start with lesser players, and then we're going to go on the five road games this year. We'll probably end up being lucky if we go 6-6. So now he's got a losing record. And so how are you going to get any high school kids to come to Auburn after our fifth or sixth year of a losing record? And so now he goes into his next year, and then now you've got five home games against all the hard teams, but then now you're going to add Notre Dame on the road? I mean, I'm like, oh, my God, are you literally kidding me? He's got no chance if he does. And then now his third year, he's got to go back on the road to all those hard teams and then Notre Dame at home? I mean, if you were going to hire a coach that's a possible up and coming guy, then you give him an Arizona or somebody that Auburn fans went to Kentucky knowing that we were probably going to have a good chance of losing. It was a bummer game, and we still sold it out. We didn't go because it was Notre Dame. Auburn wants to win. If I'm going to bring in an up and coming coach, I want him to have at least get to seven wins.
You're playing, but you're playing chess here, and I know I like it, but it's like because most people overwhelmingly love the idea of Notre Dame in 27 and 28, and you're asking asking a question nobody's asking, which is,
can you win it?
Are you worried? Yeah. What about how difficult this makes the 27 schedule? And as great as a Notre Dame home game is in 28. You've made the schedule more challenging than you would have made it if you'd added a lesser Big 12 or
Northwestern
ACC team
or somebody,
to the schedule. I mean, I have to wrestle with that because I love the idea of Notre Dame on the schedule for 2 years. But you're right. I mean, it's already tough with nine SEC games, but it's going to be tougher.
We're going to be saying our coach is 5-4 or 4-5. After the Notre Dame loss, and it's our seventh consecutive losing season, and we're looking for another coach.
Brian Harsin would have taken a winnable non-conference opponent instead of Penn State in hindsight, yeah, right? After those two Penn State games, as cool as it was to play.
The one up there was a whole lot more fun than the one here, I can tell you that. I do think, Pat, look, we don't know what John Cohen's thinking now. Just because you're hearing a lot of stuff doesn't mean that that's the top guy on John Cohen's list. Now, he may be. And if he is, then John Cohen is banking that he's got the right guy and he's out in front of everybody. And if it doesn't work, it'll be his job next.
I just can't imagine if you had unlimited source of funds and you could pick any coach in the whole country, you would literally go get a guy who's never coached a Power Five team. You would do that. Either one, any of y'all would do that.
I mean, it's if you were convinced that guy was the right guy,
right.
And I get it's a low percentage. I mean, people would say, like, what, Urban Meyer hadn't coached a major conference game when Florida hired him. Dan Lanning was new to
college football. Look at your top 10.
Kirby.
Right now.
Right? Like, there are some guys that were relatively new to the sport.
But how many guys failed in that same period of time? Probably
a lot.
20 or 30.
A ton of them. Yeah. But that. You know, you got to hit it right.
But Hugh Freeze had SEC.
No guarantees.
Hugh Freeze had a bunch of SEC experience.
But
right?
If I told you, you have to move out of Auburn in 3 years if you get it wrong, and you're going to go get a job somewhere else in Louisiana or whatever, you would risk that? If I'm John Cohen, I'm going out and getting the best guy, period, because I want to stay in Auburn. It almost seems like every move he's making and everything, we're going to hurry up and hire the quickest guy we can get. You know what? So everybody just transfers. Well, I don't see the purpose. When I hear LSU, we're going to wait and we're going to get the best guy, period. That's the answer. The answer is not, hey, oh, we just had five losing seasons in a row. Let's just go ahead out and get hire the quickest guy possible and with no resume and just
it's all in the question, Pat. I asked what would his timeline like to be. And in a perfect world, you know, he'd like to have it done as soon as possible after the Iron Bowl. But if they don't feel like they can get their best guy, I don't think he's going to hire just anybody just to have a coach hired within a few days after the Iron Bowl.
Yeah, that's just what it sounds like. Because I mean, even the Notre Dame guy, I don't mind him. I mean, I think he sounds
nice
great as a coach. But I mean, I don't particularly want it. I'd rather have Lane. But he's definitely a better option.
How many championship games has Lane coached in?
I'm just saying. I want an offensive guru. I'm just tired of the offense getting 3 points. I'm just so tired of it. I want an offensive guru, and I don't believe that Summerall comes in here as a defensive guy. He's got to go hire him an offensive guru. I'd rather just hire an offensive guru and don't have to worry about it anymore, and keep Durkin, and then you got it. Maybe you got everything. But I'll take that guy from. I'm just saying, even the guy from Notre Dame is off the table because he's going to be in the playoffs. So I mean, we're not going to go for him either. I mean, to me, I just think racing in the position Auburn's in, and if it was, and I, if I don't make, get this one right, my job's gone, and I'm moving out of Auburn. I mean, I just can't imagine that you wouldn't just get it right.
I do think that John Cohen understands the stakes. He doesn't get to get
what,
this one right.
What happens if Auburn, LSU, Florida all wait? They wait, and an Ole Miss makes a run into the playoffs, and then January 15th, Lane goes, "Sorry guys, I'm staying here at Ole Miss." Then what?
You better scramble for. Well, if three SEC teams
would,
are waiting,
it, wouldn't it be funny though?
Into mid January for
it,
one.
It would be so entertaining to the rest of the country.
The Bachelor
to watch the SEC just you know just. Have three teams basically fold.
I wouldn't have the stomach for that game of chicken. If three SEC teams are waiting into
hey,
January,
even if you're, but if you're the only one, if you're the only one, and it comes down to it, and Lane goes, yeah, the money's great. I'm getting it all here. I don't have to move anywhere. That's why we talk so much about it because we don't know.
Yeah.
But everybody wants the best thing possible, but nobody knows what that is right now. Great stuff, Pat. We got to get to our bottom of the hour break. Plenty of time for you to join us here on the Friday Drive.
The Drive with Bill Cameron and Dan Peck on ESPN 106.7 and online at ESPNAU.com. To be a part of The Drive, call 334-321-1390, toll free at 888-382-7502, or email thedrive@ESPNAU.com.
Welcome back into the Friday Drive. We will take a look at the games around the SEC and some big ones around the country as well, but... yeah, just to sort of follow up. I mean, I don't think that Auburn's going to try to pinch pennies on getting its next coach, and I don't, and I really don't think that that John Cohen is going to just hire somebody if he doesn't have somebody when the Iron Bowl comes, then just hire the first guy that's out there. I don't think it's anything like that. But look, nobody's going to come out. Maybe LSU. LSU's probably the only school that has people saying things. Sometimes you wonder if they really know what they're saying or if they really should be saying things about how much they're going to spend or how long they're going to wait or who they're going after.
I thought the most striking thing about what Pat had to say in that last segment was his Summerall skepticism. And I wonder how many Auburn fans are in that boat, where they look at John Summerall's resume and they say, yeah, he could be great someday, but this is an urgent situation that needs the right guy right now, and we're not sure that's him. What do you say in response to
people? I think there are. I think the Billy Napier situation in Florida has quite a few people going, well, it could be that. It could. I mean, it could. But it could be the next Kurt Cignetti. I mean, you don't know. I mean, Yeah. That's the thing. You won't know until they get in, and do they fit there, and can they make it work there?
And as I said to Pat on the call, like, I understand skepticism of a guy lacking SEC experience, but SEC experience was a big selling point for Hugh Freeze. The fact that he'd been in the SEC before and knew the lay of the land was one of the reasons why he was going to be the guy to fix it immediately. And at no point.
And what did you hear?
At no point during the 3 years did it seem like Hugh Freeze's SEC experience was helping you win football games.
Right. The deal with him, too, fair or not, he beat Saban twice. And that helped him get the job. I mean, there's no question.
I mean, the fact that his offense has scored 35 points.
Right,
could spark upsets, too. It's not just that, you know, it's not just beating Saban. It's, I think, the thought that he could be.
That was big, though.
He could be someone who gives you you know, a fighting chance in upsets. Someone who can beat teams with more. You know, he can do less with more. If he's beating Nick Saban when he's at Ole Miss, this is a guy who knows how to do less with more. Didn't seem like that panned out in his 3 years at Auburn as far as being able to beat teams with superior talent, you know, by being able to out-scheme them. I think John Summerall's a really interesting candidate and understandably one of the best ones. I think he could be, the amount of winning he's done at a Troy situation that was a mess when he got there. Tulane was rolling. Willie Fritz did really well. Right. But he's won games at Tulane these last couple of years, and
he could be in for a rough night tonight.
Yeah, it's going to be interesting.
That's at Memphis tonight. Mm-hmm. All right. You absolutely don't know. There are no guarantees. I will say this though: I think John Summerall will be a head coach in the SEC next year.
Yeah,
in the SEC.
Not all that shocking. I would think that. I mean, there are four open jobs right now. There's the chance that one of those jobs could go into the SEC and poach a sitting head coach. There's a chance another one of these coaches could get fired between now and the end of the season. I think that if Mark Stoops were to lose to Florida tomorrow, even though he beat Auburn.
I think Mark Stoops will lose to Florida tomorrow.
Yeah, I think you lose to Florida tomorrow
and
at home.
When you get waxed by in-state Louisville.
Yeah.
You got Vandy and Louisville coming up before the season's over. Right?
Louisville will do everything they can to absolutely destroy
you. They'll hang 100 on them.
That wasn't the kind of win on Saturday for Kentucky that makes you think, oh, they're ready to take on.
Oh, yeah.
That was a relief.
Thank God.
How lucky are we?
If they they got three more games against major conference opponents. If they lose all of them, it wouldn't be all that shocking based on the fact. And they were still able to beat all of them.
Well, I mean, they are, after Florida, the last two are at Vandy and at Louisville.
I don't really like Mark Stoops' chances in that situation. And if one of these coaches were to get poached and there's an opening, John Summerall could very well be a candidate.
And he's a Kentucky player.
Brad, yeah. Yeah. All right, let's get one call before we get to our final break.
Jerry.
Hey, guys.
Hey, Jerry.
How y'all doing?
All right.
All right. Listen, I got two questions. Well, three questions. I'm going to listen to the answer on the first two, and then the third question I'm going to hang up and listen. First question, wasn't Pat Dye never a head coach at a Power 5 program?
Until he came to Auburn. I mean, he was at East Carolina. For a few years in Wyoming at 1 year. So
1 year.
Yeah, so I mean not a power conference, no.
So that belief of Pat is shot down. the second question, is Pat the same guy that said that Patrick Nix would never be a good quarterback?
I don't recall him saying that.
I don't want to go too deep into the past.
You mean Bo?
I mean, I'm sorry, Bo Nix.
Yeah, but I don't think so.
No, that we had some callers that were really negative on Bo Nix. I don't think Pat was one of them.
All right, my third question. I'm going to hang up and listen. Do you think Tom Brady could play behind this Auburn offensive line? I'm going to hang up and listen to the answer. Okay.
I mean,
Tom's in pretty good shape. But I don't know.
I mean, Peyton Thorne's numbers last year would be a huge improvement over what you've gotten this
year. Right.
For the thought that it's play calling. I would say you lost Keandre Lambert-Smith, but the fact is, like, Auburn's offense was far more potent last year with Peyton Thorne at quarterback and the same offensive staff than they are this year, when the biggest difference is you've moved from Peyton Thorne to Jackson and Ashton, which to me would be an indictment of the guys you have playing quarterback this year. Maybe, with a different offensive line, Jackson and Ashton would be considerably better, although I would point to their track records elsewhere in college football as evidence that that might not be the case. Look, I keep coming. I mean, we said this a couple of weeks ago. Hugh Freeze, for the second year in a row, decided he was going to fix quarterbacks. Rather than take someone who was coming off of success last year, he said, I'm going to take someone who's got raw potential, but it hasn't worked out lately, and I'm going to unlock them with my offense. And it had mixed results last year, bringing Peyton Thorne back for a second year and changing the stuff around him. And it got worse this year by going out and getting a couple of quarterbacks that were coming off rough seasons and thinking that with Auburn's supporting cast, those guys would do well. Like, and so maybe the problem's the supporting cast, but when the problem keeps being your supporting cast, at some point you got to point the finger at the quarterback. Like when the quarterback, when you change some things, except quarterback, and the problems are the same. Like Jackson Arnold performed like this at Oklahoma last year. Totally different situation. His numbers strikingly similar. Maybe that's the fault of both offensive lines. Maybe that's the fault of both. How about this? Second year in a row, the play caller for Jackson Arnold lost his job midseason. Maybe that's the fault of the play caller for the second year in a row. I don't know. Coach, you follow horse racing.
Yeah.
Some point.
You got to switch jockeys.
Some point, it's not the jockey, it's the horse.
Yeah. Like, that's true. No. Jack ever won a Kentucky Derby. I know
that. All right, let's get to our final break. We'll take a quick look at the games around the SEC and give you our thoughts, final thoughts on Auburn-Vandy when we come back to wrap things up here on the Friday Drive.
Experience and knowledge from the pros.
On ESPN 106.7. Online at ESPNAU.com. To be a part of the drive, call 334-321-1390. Toll free at 888-382-7502. Or email the drive at ESPNAU.com.
Final few minutes of the Friday drive. All right, quickly around the SEC. We mentioned Florida-Kentucky. I think even though the game is in Lexington, I like the Gators. No. Kentucky's win didn't impress me that much last week.
How could it have impressed you? I mean, came away from that game thinking that there were big problems with both teams. Somebody had to win that game.
Yep. Yeah.
But you weren't watching two teams build for success in the SEC. What do you think of college? What do you think of A&M going to
at Columbia?
Going to Columbia facing Missouri.
This is it for Missouri. I mean, if they lose this one, they're out of the playoff picture. Their schedule hasn't been the toughest.
I think a trail off after the Prabula injury would be sort of understandable.
It is,
right?
Although now Eli's had a little bit of time to work with his true freshman, very highly touted freshman.
I remember talking about Matt Zollers, right? Like that was a
huge pickup
for
Missouri. So I don't know. I think Texas A&M wins, but I think it's going to be close.
Mm-hmm. It would be. I mean, how impressive would it be to go to the third guy, the true freshman,
right,
on the depth chart, and you're hanging with an undefeated A&M team?
Hey, you want to see a guy that if that's the case, then,
goes up.
Then even more proof of quarterback development.
Yeah, I mean, I think it would be a feather in the cap for Eli, like no matter what he's doing,
even
next
if it's
season.
Close.
But yeah, that's. I mean, if it's not close, it's almost understandable when you're down to number three and you're facing a team that's 8-0 on the season, like A&M. Like if A&M comes in there and just plays great, I mean, some of that's maybe about Missouri. More that would be about
absolutely
about what Elko's got going at A&M, and they could play for the SEC championship game for the first time in program history this year. They could be in that game. I mean, you still have the chance of an A&M Ole Miss SEC championship game
that never played in the title game.
Two teams that have never been there.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, Ole Miss, one of
Citadel.
Yeah, you know, they don't exactly have the week off. A lot of teams in the SEC do.
Mm-hmm.
They don't have the week off. They've got a scrimmage against
almost.
The Citadel. Yeah. Alabama-LSU, this one, it's funny because you hear a lot of the same type things from LSU people that we're hearing from Auburn, but I think LSU has more talent to do it with. I mean, if they're more aggressive, they are more in attack mode, they're playing with their hair on fire, whatever, things like that, I think they'll be more productive than Auburn could expect to be. I just don't know that in Tuscaloosa, the way Alabama – has been playing and getting over that South Carolina game and having an open date, I still think Alabama takes care of business against LSU.
Yeah, if this game were in Baton Rouge, maybe you'd think there's that chance for magic, for voodoo, right? But instead, I think in Tuscaloosa, like night it's just game. Yeah, that's a big ask. Just to keep it close is going to be a big ask. And if it starts to roll for Alabama,
it will continue.
I think Kalen DeBoer would enjoy absolutely demolishing this LSU team.
Quickly, I think Georgia-Mississippi State could be a really interesting ball game. I think Georgia wins, but I think State's getting better, and Georgia's not untouchable.
Hey, shout out to Jeff Lebby. I mean, you're talking, 76 points in the last two SEC games for Jeff Lebby's offense. They, nearly beat Texas, beat Arkansas.
All right, and then Auburn-Vandy. I don't know why, but I picked Auburn in a low-scoring, close one.
Yeah, I just if Auburn can do enough offensively,
I've been on medication all week.
So yeah, I have this feeling this is the week that it starts to you start to see the games stop being as close as they've been through the first half of the season. I'm going Vandy by a couple of scores.
I'm going Auburn.
Don, have a great weekend.
Thank you guys.
We'll be back on Monday. Have a great weekend, everybody. We are out of here.
This is Lee County Revenue Commissioner Olene Price. When we